Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me via Zencaster on this Sunday evening is my friend Michael Lieboff. And Mike, it's a cliche, but I think it's apt this week for the Islanders. We saw the good, the bad, and the ugly. Three games, one of each, getting progressively worse from what it started out as. And I'm still not really over Saturday's loss to Buffalo. There was a lot that disturbed me that we'll get into, despite it being only the fourth game of the season. I hated it. I hated every minute of it. And I want to get your thoughts on it as well. But what do you think? Good, the bad, and the ugly this week? Or
maybe it's a little harsh. Maybe it's like the good, the bad, and the like exciting. I don't know, because I'm really encouraged by the first four games, considering how the schedule's set up. I didn't go to bed sad yet, which is I was mad. I went to bed mad Saturday night, but not sad yet. And right. And there's a huge difference between being a sports fan, going to bed mad and sad. Like if you're sad, it means that you just watched the team fall to 2-4 on the season. And the Colorado Avalanche, Carolina Hurricanes, and New York Rangers are waiting for you, and the season's basically over. And, you know, this was your prove-it season to prove that the COVID season was an outlier. I distinctly remember after those first six games last year going to bed sad and thinking that, wow, I can't believe the season's already over. Mm-hmm. Whereas that Sabres game, I went to bed mad, but there's a couple of things. One, another cliche to throw out there is I think if someone offered you the 2-1-1 start, you would have probably bit their hand off for it. Especially with the way like the league's kind of setting up here in the first few weeks, it seems like a lot of teams suck, are sucking out of the gate. Connor McDavid's hurt. Right. The Lightning are playing weird stuff. The Hurricanes are terrible. Yeah. Right. Yeah, the Hurricanes, this radio guy who I know, I texted him last night. I was like, what the hell is going on down there? He goes, there's a good chance we stink. Like, I'm not, and he's very, very optimistic all the time. Very, very much sees the world through Hurricanes colored glasses. Mm-hmm. And the Islanders are kind of just being the Islanders, steadfast, 2-1-1. I think most people in the league probably haven't watched them yet. Maybe they watched them Friday night because there's only two games on, and they wanted to watch the fun, exciting Devils who went undefeated in the preseason for each. And the Islanders happened to be the supporting actor in that film. So for most people, they probably haven't watched much of the Islanders, and they see 2-1-1 and say, yeah, that makes sense. And that's fine. Like, just keep trudging along. Keep going 2-1-1 in these four game samples. We'll get into the other stuff, the good, the bad, and the ugly, like you said, because there definitely was a lot of different things. But I will say, what you'll hear a lot from the first couple weeks of the season is, have we really learned anything about this team yet? And I think for like 30, maybe 30 teams in the NHL, we haven't. Whereas for the Sharks, we learned that, yeah, they're probably as bad as we thought. And then the other team I think we actually learned a lot about was the Islanders. And through this first four games, just to like rattle it off before we expand on these things, we learned that Bo Horvat is in fact very good. The Engvall, Nelson, Palmieri line is awesome still. Matt Barzal as a winger, it works. Like, we learned the goaltending, obviously, is still splendid. I think we learned a lot of things that we needed to hear or to see with our own eyes, just to kind of validate our hypotheses as Islander fans, because we were trying to tell people, like, no, this line is unbelievable. This Bowie Horvat guy, he didn't forget how to play hockey. He like all this stuff, and I think we also learned some of the bad stuff too. I think we learned that third line needs to be figured out. We learned that Samuel Bolduc still is having trouble playing for the Islanders, and so, you know, and that, you know, this team is just going to have duds every now and then, and they certainly did on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that you're taking like the glass half full approach, because I was expecting you to be like, yeah, the season is over, like that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Like that goal by Horvat against the Devils,
yeah,
changes everything. If the Islanders go 2-2 after those first two games, we're having a very different conversation. But the reality is, they got a point out of that game, and I walked into, I actually woke up that morning Friday. I went to the game against the Devils, but I woke up, the first thought in my mind was, man, if the Islanders just get a point out of this one, the week's a success. And maybe they thought that too.
Yeah.
And that's why they no-showed in Buffalo.
Yeah, it's possible. Before we dive further into this, reminder that you can get ad-free episodes of Islanders Anxiety plus bonus content at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month. This week, we're going to have our Country Club Atmosphere episode going up on Wednesday, where Mike talks about how he ended up backstage at the Victoria's Secret fashion show. So you're not going to want to miss bonus stuff like that. So sign up at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety today. That game, I thought the Devils game, the ending sucked, and we'll talk about that at length in a second. But I thought the importance of that game was in that they just didn't quit. They were very resilient, and they, you know, were kind of skating uphill the whole time. But it was nice to see an Islanders team that just didn't want to give up. And every time the Devils scored, the Islanders came roaring right back, which is, you know, a hallmark of a team that we saw not long ago, you know, that made two semifinals in the playoffs. I'll give you the choice. What game would you want to start with? We have the 1-0 win over the Coyotes on Tuesday, the 5-4 overtime loss to the Devils on Friday, and then the 3-1 loss in Buffalo on Saturday. That was mostly a 3-0 loss. But which of those games would you rather talk about first?
I think we can go chronologically, because I think that's the way that this week kind of, it sounds stupid to say it like this, but the way this week kind of played out, I think that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Because I still think that Devils performance was a bit of a crescendo for their start. And then obviously it was a peak and then a very quick valley.
Yeah, very quick. All right, so we'll start with the 1-0 win over the Coyotes on Tuesday. It's been said before, but now's our turn. You know, 1-0 really doesn't give the indication of what that game was like. The Islanders basically dominated the entire game from start to finish. At one point, shots were 24-7 Islanders after two periods. You know, the Coyotes did push a little bit, but the Islanders didn't really give them a whole lot. Barzal scored a beautiful power play goal from Noah Dobson, and you know, that kind of goal gets scored a dozen or so times from every other team in the league. But for the Islanders, that was like, wow, they can do that too. How about that? It works, you know? And so they get, you know, what you want to see out of your top power play unit. And Ilya Sorokin made 14 saves in the shutout. And you might call this the Marty Brodeur special. Like, this was, you know, how many 14 save shutouts did Marty Brodeur have in his career? You know, a lot. Everybody was excellent. And again, don't let the score fool you. Karel Vemelka was very, very good for the Coyotes, and he stood on his head very much. But boy, that game was great. And that was Sorokin's 17th shutout in his NHL career. He's not played very many games, folks, as you know. I don't have it in front of me, but Rob Taub had a great tweet. I don't know who asked him, like, you know, what do you think about climbing the ranks? He's now passed Rick DiPietro for third all time on the team shutout list, and he said, I don't care about this. but he said it in a way that was like, I'm not concerned about it. This isn't my priority. I just, you know, I'm out here making the saves and doing my job. So again, the fact that he's already third on the team shutout list is insane. The fact that Chico Resch has held the team shutout title for over 40 years is also insane. Chico, again, one of the most underrated Islanders of all time. But this was a great game, and this was as vintage Islanders as you can get. You may have even convinced me that Barry Trotz was behind the bench, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. So were you at this game, and what were your thoughts on it? Yeah?
Yeah. I didn't think they were going to score. I think I texted you, and yes. Then they scored that second. So
yeah.
I mean, that game was incredible. Like, it should have. I think a fair score of that game was maybe 3-0.
Yeah.
Vemelka was awesome. He's really good. I think the secret's probably out on him being a really good goalie.
He's a little like an even better Tommy Salo, who was a good goalie on some really, really bad teams. But Vemelka is even better than he is. Like, if he gets up on a really good team, look out, because they're going to be
He's any his, like, his equipment and his kind of style reminds me a bit of Nikolai Habibulin too, former Coyote. So maybe that's just because the two played for the same team and he's wearing the Kachina jersey. But tip the cap to him. Tip the cap to Sorokin, because I would say at least four of the 14 saves were pretty incredible, including a lot late in the game when the Islanders were at 1-0. And it's tells you how stupid sports are, that had the Islanders allowed the Coyotes to score late and they got a point out of that game, we'd be sitting here talking about, like, you know, even if they had won the Devils game, be like, oh, what a squandered opportunity. But just because the way things shake out, getting the point against the Devils matters a lot more, and the opponent. But I was so impressed with that game against the Coyotes. I thought it was really well coached. Because they were without Scott Mayfield, who's day-to-day, which in Islanders language means we might see him again this season, or he might have torn his ACL like when Oliver Wallstrom was day-to-day. I thought everybody was so good. Horvat, Barzal, the second line again. You know, Noah Dobson covered himself. He was suddenly embroiled in some controversy on Islanders Twitter there for the week, and maybe we just know these guys too well, that we've been saying forever that he's playing like he's got his phone in his pocket for the last, you know, 8 months or so. And then he put his phone away. He left his phone in his locker, it seemed like, by deleting Twitter. And he's had a couple solid games. He's had a mistake here or there against, the Coyotes and Sabres and Devils, but they're fewer and far between. They're not the the team's not like set up in the power play. They're moving the puck around well, and then all of a sudden he passes it to Jesper Bratt kind of mistakes. It's different. Like he looks like he's on the right path. So
yeah,
whatever happened that night, we forgive you. As long as you keep playing like this, keep that cell phone in the locker. You could check it after the game. We promise. And nothing will change. If there's something really important that you need to know, somebody will let you know, in the locker room, in right. the intermissions or something. But yeah, I thought to a man, everybody in that game was really, really good. I was so impressed with the fourth line in the first three games as well. You hear so many times about players that need bounce back seasons. And usually it's Alex DeBrincat, a guy who scored 40 goals, and then he scored, 22, and then he's like a star in the league. Or even Austin Matthews, people are calling his season last year, even though he scored 40, a down year. Star players are usually the ones that needed bounce back seasons. The Cal Clutterbuck has been, I think, really good. I haven't looked at any stats because why would you really look at expected goals numbers through four games? When yesterday's game against the Sabres is going to tank everybody's numbers, but that even if players had three good games, but they just were, the ice was so tilted against them in one game, it's going to skew everything. So it's it is much more pencil and paper stuff right now. And I think the fourth line has been really good. So tip of the cap to them. And Ryan Pulock, I think, has been awesome. I think Romano has been pretty good. I left that Coyotes game thinking, did everybody get better? Because that's what it felt like. Except you can make the argument of the third line, but everybody else, and did most of this team just get better?
Yeah, that was a really good game. Dobson was really good, and it was like you watched thinking this is the almost peak version of this team. Everybody was really working hard, making things go, and if it wasn't for Vemelka's heroics, like you said, it could have been easily 3 or 4-0 just in the first two periods.
Right.
So it was a fun game to watch. And, we as Islanders fans, we like 1-0 games. This is our element. We eat this stuff for breakfast, and people might look at the score and be like, oh God, Coyotes Islanders 1-0. Oh God, I'm not going to go revisit that one. But for us, man, that game was like a party. Like that was just, that was the perfect game for us. We love it. And, sign me up for 82 more of those. I'd love it. So that led into, so the Islanders are 2-0. Great. All right. So now here come the New Jersey Devils.
That was the first 2-0 start since 2014-15.
Which was a crazy season. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's hard. Most teams just accidentally start 2-0 because maybe they catch other teams in weird schedule spots or whatever. It's really hard not to start a season 2-0 or only do it once in basically a decade.
Yeah, I wonder when.
Which I think it leads to a lot of the overwhelming optimism after that game.
Right. I wonder when the previous 2-0 start was before that 14-15 season. Probably 1992.
Right, 01-02. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, probably was. But so there was a lot of optimism. The Devils were coming in Friday. They had struggled a little bit. They lost, 2-3 in a row, something like that. Of course, every team has played, 6 games at this point, except for the Islanders, who only played 2, which is another funny subplot. But here come the Devils. And this was a game, again, resilient is the way I describe this game, because every time the Devils scored and they started to take with control early, the Islanders would come back. So the Islanders killed off a penalty. Nelson puts the Islanders up 1-0. Sorokin makes a bunch of 6 saves on Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt. This is what's going to annoy me the most about losing this game, is that I hope we still see highlights of this, because these were insane saves. I mean, there was a pad save too later on, the glove save on Hughes and he was by himself. Like, these are amazing, say probably save of the year kind of things in the third game of the season. But then it also begs the question, where the hell are all the defense when Jack Hughes is by himself in the slot? But that's a different question. Dougie Hamilton tied the game. And then Casey Zizekas is going through another one of his phases where he takes 5 penalties a game. I don't know he did this a couple of years ago. I don't know what's going on with Casey. He keeps looking around like, I didn't do anything. It's like he's out here trying to play aggressively, but takes a penalty. Tyler Toffoli at the end of the first period, Tyler Toffoli cashes in immediately in the second period, but then Nelson tied it with his second goal of the game. Then Luke Hughes untied it with a power play goal. The Islanders gave up four power play goals in this, which Andrew Gross mentioned, and he's probably right. This is going to mess up their power play percentage, their penalty kill percentage all year, just because they gave up four power play goals in the same game, which is ridiculous. Yeah, Sorokin made a sliding pad save on Nathan Bastian, which was is equally as insane as the other two saves. Horvat tied the game with his first of the year. He loves shooting off the side of the net, man. Nobody's better at a right angle than Bo Horvat. It's pretty crazy. Banks it in into Akira Schmid's net. So they're going into the third period down 3-2. And you're like, okay, that's pretty cool. Hughes gets an easy power play goal. I mean, what are we even doing out here? This was probably the nadir of the game for me. But like you said, Horvat ties the game with a minute 14 left. Nelson had a couple of spectacular chances in that third period. The Islanders kind of outplayed the Devils in the fourth period and really pushed hard. And it was Horvat who got it in. There was big scrum in front of the net, but Horvat was there. And it was great. Love to see two goal game for Bo Horvat. They go to overtime. And the Islanders have a couple of chances early, and then they just give Jack Hughes all the room in the world, and he just whips one past Sorokin and makes him look kind of like a chump, and it's 5-4 Devils. And it went from being this very exciting, very fun, back and forth, you know, again, resilient game from the Islanders to being like, are you fucking kidding me? Really? Seriously? Like, come on. And then left, I mean, a bad taste doesn't even really cover it. And like you, I couldn't even go to sleep for a while. I ended up watching a bunch of other stuff. I was just so mad. I couldn't even, because like, I get you don't want to be too aggressive, especially in overtime, but like, to just wait for the guy to just, you know, rocket a wrist shot past your goalie is a little bit much. Like, come on. Yeah. What are we doing out here? But hugely disappointing end to what had been a really fun game. And Sorokin was great. Don't let the four goals against fool you. He was fantastic. He made 33 saves in that game. And, you know, the Islanders defense wasn't as good as it should have been, but fun game, but very sloppy from the Islanders' point of view. But you give them credit for coming back every once in a while and you know, trying to get the win, although they just sort of let Jack Hughes take it at the end, which is very annoying. 4 points for him in that game. So, yeah, I mean, what was it like in the building? I can't even – it must have been like somebody let the air out of the tires.
I think very positive walking out of there. It was – most people were pretty happy. It felt closer to a win than a loss. It didn't – you know, it wasn't the crazy atmosphere it would be if they had won and Maxine Nightingale was playing, right? But I think that – there was so much more good to take from that game than there was bad. Starting with Sorokin. We're going to talk about Sorokin so much this season that I don't even want to spend time on it.
Yeah. I meant to say off the bat that the two guys we should avoid talking about this entire time are Sorokin and Varlamov, who was fantastic in the Sabres game. Both of these guys were terrific. Neither of these losses are on them. Even again, that, you know, with that Jack Hughes goal. So they were both fantastic. And to me, seeing Varlamov in that Sabres game was like, welcome back, Semyon Varlamov. Like, it felt good.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Back. Yeah, he was great. Sorry.
So, yeah, we can put Sorokin aside. He was clearly the story in that game.
Yeah.
But the reason I was so encouraged by it was, first of all, was with Bowie Horvat, those are two goals. Those are goal scorer goals.
Yeah.
And I don't think it wasn't lost on a lot of people. A couple people pointed out to me, and I was joking with it around about it too, that his first goal, which was definitely going to be the only Martin Horvat from Martin and Dobson goal that we'll probably ever see. That great play by Dobson. Once again, cell phone, keep it in the locker. He fakes the shot and makes a pass to Horvat, who's, like you said, is at a tough angle. And who's in like the trigger spot but Simon Holmstrom? And Dobson had enough wherewithal to compute, all right, who's got a better chance of scoring here on a good pass? Simon Holmstrom from a good angle or Bo Horvat from a shitty angle? And he chose the right choice, which is Horvat. That's a goal scorer's goal, and so was his second one. Which I think something the Islanders have been missing for since their captain before Anders Lee was they haven't had a guy who's really good at picking the puck out of a scrum and then depositing it. And Horvat's really good at that. He's good at like locating the puck, knowing exactly where to put that puck to either create more chaos and someone else will score or score himself. And that showed in the game tying goal, which, you know, Kyle Palmieri, credit to him too. He flings it at the net. There's just a kerfuffle there in the front, falls to Horvat, and he wired that. If you watch that back, like you could see, not only is he skating hard on like the zone entry, but he really wires that into the chaos and it ends up in the net. And he scored a goal like that against the Penguins last year from like a very tough angle.
Yeah.
Similarly, just like fired, right? Just rifled it. And Tristan Jarry did what Tristan Jarry does. Lets the Islanders score goals. And the Islanders are celebrating. But that was one of the, you know, like I said, there's a lot more good than bad. That was another thing. That was the first thing on my list. The way he played with Barzal was great. That second line was cooking all night. They were just too much for the Devils to handle at times. And that overtime, like Barzal, you said, he could have won. He made a good move there on Schmidt, and he just missed the five hole.
Yeah.
And on the goal, like when they turned the puck over, Engvall was skating the puck out, and he fell. Like that was probably it looked like that was a good chance. It was like it was the end of a shift, so who knows how it turns, but it was going to be an odd man rush, and he fell.
Horvat also had a chance to shovel the puck in.
Yeah.
In overtime as well, after I think a Barzal rebound as well. So
yeah, there was just a lot to like there, especially after a 2-0 start. You walk out of a 3-game homestand with 5 out of 6 points. For the most part, the Islanders had played 2 bad periods, and they didn't let up a 5-on-5 goal that entire night.
Yes.
And that's both encouraging and discouraging, of course. But I thought the two penalties on Pelech and the two penalties on Cizikas looked like they were legit. And then the call on Engvall, I was a little confused with, because they weren't really, they seemed to be letting stuff go all night like that. And then they called him at a pivotal time, and the Islanders continued to be the only team in the NHL that can never kill off those penalties that straddle intermissions. Like it feels like the Islanders never score on them, but they always give them up. I think, I don't know, like the stuff we needed to see, which was the chemistry between Horvat and Barzal. And Horvat looks really dangerous. Like, I underestimated the way that guy could skate. He's such a powerful skater. He's faster, I think, than I thought. And he skates with authority. And I've just loved the way that those first two lines have been playing. Even with Holmstrom being scratched, I think that was more of a, let's see where Wahlstrom's legs are at this point. We kind of can take a little bit of if you want to call it a risk, we could take a risk because we're 2-0-1 and obviously it didn't pan out. But I think that the top six has been really good. The third line definitely needs some work, and the fourth line's been good. So we these things are all in the pros section, and the cons section is so much shorter. It got flipped a little bit on Saturday night, but because of the way the Islanders had played, that performance didn't eat me up. While it was happening, of course, you're like, you're pissed. You're like,
yeah,
this looks like garbage. What are you guys doing? But afterwards, you when I took like a deep breath and saw the Penguins lose to the Blues, I'm like, well, you know, I think we're actually doing all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, in within the game, it was kind of, I don't know. It was hard
to watch.
It was, and again, just the way, I don't know, the look on Hughes's face just really honked me off, as you know, one might say. It's just,
and I think we also, you walk out of that building 3-0, you beat the Devils, you might start to hear people say like, wow, man, the Islanders are turning some heads. And instead it was, you know, the Islanders, you won't hear anything about the Islanders, and then they lose on Saturday night. So nobody's going to give them a second thought yet.
Right. Well, that's the thing that drives me the craziest. And I know it shouldn't, but it does, is that this was a huge weekend for the haters. This was the weekend, or the week really, where every complaint about the Islanders that has been levied at them from all over the hockey world came to fruition, to realization. You know, 1-0 win. Okay, who cares? They, you know, suck against or they lose to everybody's golden boy, Devils team, Jack Hughes and the Devils, and their goaltending can't bail them out. And then on Saturday, 3-1 loss to Buffalo, they lose to another golden boy team, and they look absolutely terrible. They look slow. They look disjointed. Yes, it's the other half of a back-to-back, but not long ago, this team used to own these games. And that I know it's the same. They're a couple of years older, but this is the same roster. And this was not a team that looked like it was prepared to play on a second of back-to-back. And my only note here is disjointed garbage, two worthless power plays. But Semyon Varlamov was great. And through two periods, through half the game, it was nothing. But then, again, Casey Mittelstadt is allowed to just walk through the slot, passes to Jeff Skinner, who scores, makes it look easy. 2.5 minutes later, Victor Olofsson wrist shot. And it's 2-0 Sabres in the blink of an eye. And they're looking very slow. They're looking very sloppy and, frankly, playing very stupid. Then the Sabres open the third period with Nick Cousins after Sam Bolduc gave the puck away to him. The Islanders never mounted any sort of defense. I mean, I know it's 3-0, but, like, you can try. And then the one goal they got, like, just floated in. Noah Dobson's shot hit somebody in the shoulder, Connor Clifton in the shoulder, kind of fluttered around in the air and just landed behind Eric Comrie. And I want to pause here for a minute to say that I sent you and our group chat at 11:30 that morning, Eric Comrie shutout incoming. Those were my exact words because he had been announced as the starter because Devin Levi is hurt now. And this man came within a minute and a half of actually shutting out the Islanders in that game.
Again.
And you never would have heard the end of it from me had that
again. Do you remember how he shut out the Islanders last year? Do you remember what happened right before that game?
No.
He let up 10. He let up 10 goals. And the Sabres, in what was a huge game in the Islanders playoff push, they come to the UBS Arena. They beat the Islanders 1-2, but it was basically 1-0 because it was 0-0 until like the 6-minute or 14-minute mark of the third period. And who scored? Kyle Poso.
Yeah.
And they walk out of there with their first win on Long Island in forever. And you want to talk about everybody's golden child. That game, I just remember being like, I'm going to make myself listen to the Sportsnet radio stuff because they're all going to talk about how huge this win was for the Sabres and stuff. And they did.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so. Just back now, let's fast forward to present day, losing to Eric Comrie. It was a really bad spot for the Islanders. Like, so as someone who bets on hockey all the time, that was the type of spot you have circled. You're like, the Sabres are going to be a good bet tonight. The Islanders are having a good start. You could sell high on the Islanders a little bit here. Plus they're traveling on a back-to-back. They played a crazy game against the Devils. The Sabres are going to be a very desperate team. They're waiting for them at home. It was the quintessential. This team has every excuse.
Yeah.
Now, you can't cash that in the fourth game of the season. You can't. If this was game 62, and the Islanders were cruising, they're comfortably at least in the playoffs in a playoff spot, we'd be totally okay with it.
Yeah.
But when it's this spot, it becomes a little more upsetting just because we're four games in. This is the fourth game of season you guys all lived through last year. You had to have Peter Mrazek bail your asses out to make the playoffs. You know every point is going to matter. That's why that Devil's point is so important too. Like, you put that one in the pocket and you run out of there and you get on the plane, you fly to Buffalo and you do everything you can to get another one. And they were so flat. Ugh, I thought the first period was okay too. I was more encouraged with the way they played in the first period than discouraged because of the spot. I'm like, if I was a Sabres fan after that first intermission or in that first intermission, I'd be like, I can't believe we don't have these guys over a barrel right now.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And And then the Islanders just handed it to them in the second. And what there's a couple of things that were really frustrating. One, like I said, the Sabres weren't going to be the more desperate team. Had the Islanders won that game in regulation and put the Sabres at 1-4,
yeah,
my oh, God, boy. It would
that
just
been a lot of fun.
It would been so much fun. and now we're like you said, that's you lose to two Golden Childs in a row, and it's going to be annoying. And I don't want to like put anything on the too many of the players because I think it was just such a flat effort from everybody. But the one or two, I guess the two guys you have to call out, or three that you have to call out, are Bolduc. Like, my man just needs to stop passing it to the other team. I don't know if I've ever seen a defenseman that creates a turnover on his own. No pressure on him. Just errant passes. He's clearly, you know, got some sort of like the yips, like very nervous or something in his own zone, trying to make that breakout pass. Because we saw it during the playoffs and during the stretch run last year. And then the other two were Gauthier and, more importantly, Wahlstrom, who...
Yeah.
I don't know how... And maybe he's just catching up to game speed. Whatever, if you want to say that. But how on earth does Oliver Wahlstrom come into that game and not be noticeable in any way?
You just took the words out of my mouth. Because this is what I've been stewing about for... 24 hours now or whatever it is. And it's the same exact thing that you were going to say. Like, I thought Lane was 100% right in putting Wahlstrom and Julian Gauthier into the lineup for Simon Holmstrom and Hudson Fashing. However, those two guys have played before, Fashing hasn't looked that great so far this year. It's okay. Like, it's a back-to-back. He even said, it's a back-to-back situation. Want to get those guys in, get them playing speed. Great. The fact that those two guys... More so Wahlstrom, obviously, than Gauthier. But the fact that those two guys were absolutely invisible, save for a couple of moments, there was a shift there in the third period. They, of course, they had to highlight it on MSG because that was the only highlight they had was, Horvat, Barzal, and Wahlstrom kind of whacking at the puck around the net. These guys were totally invisible. If you told me Gauthier didn't play that night, I would have totally believed you because aside from he had a shot at a breakaway, and like you said, your boy Bolduc hit somebody with a pass. It wasn't him though. So it didn't go anywhere. But Wahlstrom, he, after getting hurt and coming into the post game, postseason kind of, breakout day kind of stuff, talking about how it's given him this new perspective and he's going to come in more. He looked like he could have played right then. Like he was ready to restart the season right then and there while everybody else was, throwing their stuff into garbage bags and going home for the summer. And then coming back and being like, I've been working hard and I'm more focused than ever. I want, that injury was the best thing that ever happened to me because now I know, what I need to do and I'm ready to hit the ground running. To come and play like that is just like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't understand. He should have been the best player on the ice. And I get that, maybe he, wasn't quite up to game speed because he had been hurt for a while. I understand that. But like, he should have been the best player on the ice. Varlamov was by far the best Islander on the ice that night. He made 40 saves, and he deserved a lot better. But boy, it wasn't like he was playing like Gauthier. At least was playing with Pajot and on the third line. I guess Lee was there for most of it. Then he got swapped out. Somebody else was there. Like Wahlstrom got put on the line with Horvat and Barzal.
Yeah.
Like, bro, what are you doing? Like, you need to be shot out of a cannon that game. You need to be so keyed up, but you should be like the Tasmanian Devil out there. I don't understand. But he just wasn't, and he just was completely invisible. And like, had they lost and he had taken eight shots and looked like, he was, waited this month, all these months to come play that game, you would have been like, well, at least that would have been encouraging to me. That would have been like, okay, they lost, it sucked, but like the fact that Wahlstrom looked great would have been fantastic. But instead he was invisible. Like some of the other guys at least tried, I don't know. It was like he was barely there. It's like, we want this guy to succeed. We want him to be a key cog in this team's evolution. But man, I don't know. You can't have asked for a silver platter better than this game. And he just dropped it. Like, I just don't know what to say. Where does he go from here? If he plays against Colorado on Tuesday, and we're going to talk all about those games on the second half here, If he plays that same way against Colorado on Tuesday, I don't know where they go with this guy anymore. Like, I just don't. Like, I don't know what it's going to take to get through to him.
Yeah. And you want to always be careful with, like,
yeah,
it was just one game. It was just one game. But with,
I'm trying very hard not to overreact, even though it sounds
really think that it's unfair in this instance. Yeah. Like, if Pierre Engvall had this game on the season opener, be like, yeah, whatever. The guy was great last year.
Right.
He's probably just wading his way into the new season. Mm. Or if Kyle Palmieri did, same thing. Even hell, if Sebastian Aho was not great against the Sabres in his first game of the season, you give him the benefit of the doubt because the guy was really good for the Islanders, a very effective player for them last year. And by the way, I think Aho's been really good too.
He has been, for sure.
But for this, for in this case, I think it's fair to kind of just be baffled more than anything, because your career's kind of on the line. Not to overstate it, I guess. You signed your qualifying offer. You've yet to really cash in on a ton of talent. This guy's got a great shot. Maybe the second best on the season, on the team, besides Nelson, who's just, God, I love that man so much. The goals against, the first goal against the Devils, where he's like skating down on Akira Schmidt. And it was just one of those instances where you're like, oh, Brock's got the puck skating down on the wing. You could basically turn around to everyone in the section and see if anybody needs anything from the concession stand. I'll catch you guys for the yes, yes, yes part of this, because I know exactly what's going to happen. He's just the best. The over the course of an 82 game season, the Islanders are going to need a player with Oliver Wahlstrom's skill set, because people are going to get hurt and they're going to need someone who's got who could score on without warning, who can create his own shot and get it off. And he's dangerous from basically anywhere on the ice, because even if he doesn't score, he's got a hard enough, deadly enough shot that it's creating a rebound or whatever. And we just haven't seen it since the second week of last season. He had that great game against Chicago, maybe it was. I don't even know if that was last season or the season before. No, I think it was last season. He had like a really good game against the Blackhawks on national television. And since then, he's just been bad.
Yeah.
He's been Kiefer Bellows-y. He's been like Michael Dal Cole. It's just like this.
Yeah, but at least Dal Cole could play D.
Dal Cole doesn't have like the toolsy stuff that both Bellows and Wahlstrom have. And I think that Wahlstrom is a little bit better all over the ice than Bellows was. So maybe it's a little unfair. But the point is, like, you run out of chances and you can't overreact to one game for most players, but I don't think it's overreacting. It's just being honest, saying that this guy is squandering his opportunities, because it's very important that Oliver Wahlstrom contributes to this team. And if he doesn't, then they need to figure out who another person in that spot that can be that backup to the Kyle Palmieri's of the team, etc. So it's just frustrating.
We want this guy to succeed. We need him, like you said. I mean, if he becomes like a heavy shooting, just rifleman sniping goals, then the Islanders' entire outlook changes. And to be honest, they're not that they'll admit this, but I wonder if the team is sort of waiting for that to happen, because they need that. They need something there. And again, Horvat and Barzal seem to be creating some sort of chemistry together, but in all the games that he's played with Barzal, Wahlstrom has had zero chemistry with him at all, which is fair. Like, maybe they just don't work well together. That's okay. But like, then where is he going to work? And, you know, like you said, the third line hasn't really worked. Lee got moved up to the line with Barzal and Horvat, and he doesn't really work there either. But, you know, Lee's been around. Like, he knows how to contribute even if he's not doing something, although his foot speed is really – I mean, I love Anders the person, but watching him skate in that game against the Sabres was not fun. And, you know, Lee's – his thing is standing in front of the net. And when he's not doing that, yeah, you know, what is he doing?
Yeah, I don't want to judge him yet on this season because I think that him and Pajot both should almost just be put to the side.
And he could also end up with 25 goals still, and we would never, you know.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, oh, and just the third line, clearly, like, you're not going to break up Horvat and Barzal. You're not going to break up the best second line in hockey, and you're not going to break up the best fourth line in hockey right now. Right. Like, you got to just let those things go and hope that the third line just doesn't cost you a game. And I think that Pajot and Lee are both professional enough to realize that. So and Fasching as well, like, they're not gonna get the Islanders in too much trouble out there, so it's not a big deal. But with perhaps adding to the frustration with Wahlstrom is, let's say the Islanders put him on waivers tomorrow, we'll do a quick Q&A. Would you think that would be a horrible thing?
I mean, I don't know if he would get claimed, if that's what you're asking.
No. Just, I was going to say, do you think the Islanders would almost have a reason to, like, would you think that would be like, send Lou to the, you know, to the out to pasture?
I mean, it would be a little early. Like, again, if the game against Colorado was same as the one against Buffalo.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to play Colorado.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. So they got Colorado, Ottawa, and Columbus coming up. But if any one of those games is a repeat of the game against the Sabres, I think they would have a good reason to send him down. And they could always be like, I wonder if they could send him down for, like, conditioning. Oh, well, you know, he needs conditioning down in Bridgeport.
Yeah, we'll figure out a way.
Yeah. But like, don't forget, his Bridgeport time was not good either. So, like, I don't know if that would, you know, it's a tough question to answer. Like, do I think it would make sense? But I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I was getting. Like, I think the Islanders would be well within their rights to do it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And the second part of that question I was going to ask was, how do you think that the rest of Islanders and then hockey Twitter would react? Oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
Oh, Islanders keep giving up on young players.
How did they react when Kiefer Bellows got put on?
Right. Yeah.
And what's he been doing since?
Yeah, exactly. So, and this isn't, he's not a young player anymore.
No,
he's not, you know, Cal Odelius or, I mean, neither is Bolduc.
Yeah.
Really? I know.
Bolduc's been around. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think what Wahlstrom was 28. He was same draft as Dobson.
Yeah.
Like, just think about that. Noah Dobson has played 200 NHL games at least, more than that. Maybe he's closing in on three. Like, why would it be? And I don't think that they should do it, but I'm just saying, like, should they do that tomorrow? If tomorrow we wake up and you see the Islanders have waived Oliver Wahlstrom or traded Oliver Wahlstrom to the Predators for a fourth round pick, like, I think everyone would lose their shit. But I don't think that's warranted. Like, the guy clearly has talent, but here's what he's done. He scored in 2021. That shortened season, he scored 12 goals in 44 games, which was not bad. And then I thought that was probably his best season. He scored 13 in 73 the next game, next season. Yeah. And then he scored 7 in 35. And the next was always scoring one every five games.
Yeah.
That's not going to cut it. That's less. No. That's like 16 goals, 18 goals a season.
There is more expected of him. You know, fair or not, there is more expected of him. And, like, this whole conversation reminds me that the Blue Jackets just lost Liam Foudy to the Predators, who they drafted first. They drafted 18th overall in 2018. So same draft.
It's something that happens. It's like, and the reason people freak out about it is because the reaction on hockey Twitter is there's a, Rat Martin always sends me every time Alex Barre-Boulet is on waivers. some Toronto Maple Leafs writer is like, if the Buffalo Sabres don't claim Alex Barre-Boulet, they should be relegated.
Right.
And that was like 4 years ago, and he's been on waivers 10 times since. Like, first rounders. Julien Gauthier is a first round pick.
Yeah.
Like, these guys go on. This happens
a lot. This happened every time they put Josh Hosang on waivers. It was the same thing. You know, like, it was just you know, three, oh, my team's going to pick up. No, you're not. They're not going to pick him up, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Fowdy, again, as I'm looking at, 90 games played with the Blue Jackets over the last 5 years, 7 goals, 12 assists, 19 points. 19 points in 90 games. I think they were well within their rights. We've given the Blue Jackets a lot of grief already this season, and they were well within their rights to put this man on waivers, you know, as harsh as that may sound. Yeah. But,
Wallstrom,
he's on that same track, basically.
16 goals per 82 games for Wallstrom right now. So, like, and 30-point player on average over 82 games if you take his career numbers.
Yeah.
And once he's caught some bad breaks.
Yeah. Well, the injury didn't help, obviously. Yeah.
But he's still, I mean, we've seen 162 games of him, and we kind of know the player now. It's disappointing, and it sucks because he's fun. He's exciting.
Yeah.
He's got a great shot. Definitely has a skill set the Islanders are crying out for if he puts it together. But, you know, 16 goals and 30 points a season, that's, frankly, like, that's worse than Anthony Beauvillier, right? Like, that's
oh, yeah, not, for sure. Yeah.
That's not a second line player on a team that has playoff aspirations. So, yeah, it's a rough situation.
Yeah. And you know, it just gets to what I was saying on Twitter, which is that this team just simply cannot manufacture meaningful, consistent offense on a regular basis. It just can't. And that's a problem for the entire team. But, you know, when you're there, and you're the fresh legs guy.
Right. That's the other thing, right? Like, you're the fresh, him and Gauthier were the fresh legs guy. And I think you can actually make more of an excuse for Gauthier than Wallstrom too. You made a good point. Like, he was on the third line.
Yeah.
And it's also his first regular season game for a new team.
And it's just not expected of him. Like, I don't know. Didn't he get scored on? Maybe it's okay. But, like, you know, still he was pretty invisible. But yeah, Wallstrom, you know, again, fair or not, a lot is expected of him, and he has yet to come through. And he still has time, but he's losing it.
He's losing his spot to Simon Holmstrom. Like, we're talking about Wallstrom. Right. Wallstrom being a 30-point player over his 162, you know, game. That's two seasons, right? 100 basically. Yeah. So, and then. I mean, Simon Holmstrom.
I mean,
if he gets to 30 points in a season, we're gonna throw a parade. Like,
he already lost his spot to Hudson Fashion last year, basically. So I mean,
this is
guy couldn't play in the Sabres and Coyotes, but he comes to the Islanders and he's an all-star. So yeah, whew. All right, yeah. I didn't expect this, but that game, definitely played. And that to me was the most disturbing aspect of that Sabres game, was just how invisible Wallstrom was. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I'm not, I like, the result is only going to be disturbing if the Islanders, this is going to be a tough week coming up.
Yes.
The Sabres, how I feel about the Sabres loss really is dependent on how these next three games go. I think, and I think that's a fair assessment of the team, because they had a good start to the season. They're 2-1-1. I think everybody would be really satisfied with that.
Yeah.
But if they, knowing that they've got the Avalanche, who, by the way, have won 15 straight road games or 16 straight, whatever it was.
5-0 right now.
Yeah, and they're 5-0 right now. They're coming into UBS Arena to take on Sam Bolduc. This is a... So, then the Sabres loss all of a sudden can start to become an issue if they struggle to pick up points over these next three games. But the most concerning thing about it was that Wallstrom performance, because it was just discouraging more than anything. Because you keep saying, we want this guy to succeed, and we don't want to see the Islanders lose him for nothing. He was an 11th overall pick, but geez, man.
You got to help yourself, pal. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to look at those three tough games. Then we're going to look at the NHL not putting itself in a place to get actually watched by human beings. And then we will have another episode of Master Leaf Theater, all on the other side. So meet us over there. Thanks.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today
at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And now a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of two items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. Okay, so the Islanders have three games coming up this week. We talked a little bit about them a second ago. On Tuesday at 8, they have the Avalanche. Why it's an 8 o'clock start at UBS Arena, nobody knows. But maybe it's a Colorado time zone thing. Because every team is playing on Tuesday, and they're going to do this sort of NHL red zone thing. We're going to talk about that again in a second. So that's probably something to do with that. But that's Tuesday is the Avalanche. Thursday, the 26th at 7:30 are the Ottawa Senators, also at UBS Arena. And then on Saturday at 7 o'clock, they are in Columbus, a place the Islanders have won like, what, once in the last 20 years to take on the Blue Jackets. Obviously, the pressing concern here is the Avalanche. Mike said they've won 15 road games in a row. They're 5-0 this season, looking very much again like the Stanley Cup champs from a couple of years ago. This is going to be a tough one. The last year's game against the Avalanche looked like a tough one, and the Islanders won it. As scary as the Avalanche are, and this is by no means a scientific observation, it would be very funny for them to lose their first game of the season against the Islanders at UBS Arena after they're coming off of two straight losses, one in which they barely showed up. So I'm going to hold on to that hope, but it ain't much. The Senators are looking pretty good this year. I watched the game against the Red Wings on Saturday, in which they were all excited for the return of Alex DeBrincat to the Canadian Tire Center, and everybody was going to be mad, and he got some polite booing, and that was it. And I was like, you people are lightweights. I have been to my daughter's dance recitals that were more hostile than this environment right here. You got a lot to learn about, making a hostile environment for a former player who didn't want to stay. But the Senators, they lost the game, but they are very fast. They're very skilled. They're very young. And that could be a tough one for the Islanders too. And then there's the Blue Jackets, who never pose much of a threat unless they're playing at home, in which the Islanders never win. So this is going to be a tough week. If the Islanders, again, if they take four out of these 6 points, I'll take it. Even three, I think, depending on how they work out, will be okay. But that Avalanche game, man, I don't know. Yeah. Could get ugly.
that Avalanche game is terrifying for
right.
The main reason being should they lose that game in regulation, and if they get pumped in regulation too, that Senators game is must all of a sudden a must win, right? Yes, like that's the tariff. Like, it's almost akin to a 2-goal lead late in the game. You know, 6 minutes left, Islanders up 2-0 on the Penguins, and you're so scared of that goal because you don't want to. You already feel shitty enough white knuckling through a 2-goal lead with 5 minutes left. That should they score and make you white knuckle through a 1-goal lead with 4 minutes left, it's going to make you sick. So that's what's a little nerve wracking here about Tuesday night. Now they get a win against the Avalanche. Somehow, like they did last year. Did they beat them twice last year?
Did
they have a crazy game in Colorado? I remember when I was over in England for the darts, they had a wild, they lost to the Coyotes while I was on the flight, and I almost wanted to just to ask them to open the door and let me just jump into the Atlantic Ocean while they were losing the game. But I remember that vividly. And then I know that they played a couple of games that I couldn't stay up for them. I just like woke up in the middle of the night over there. And
they
like,
lost one in a shootout, 1-0, basically. They
right.
Lost,
so, yeah.
That was in Colorado. But then they won in October.
Yeah, and you remember that one. That was the comeback.
Yes.
Game. Right.
Right.
They played them pretty well. The Islanders do some things that kind of jive with beating teams like Colorado. Like they're just going to clog up the middle of the ice, and teams like Colorado just want to zing around all game. And when they play teams like the Islanders that sit back, it can get a little frustrating. So who knows?
Yeah.
But it's a really a crossroads game. The Islanders are either going to walk us down a path of really having a couple pressure-filled days leading into that Senators game, or you win that that Avalanche game and you get a point or two out of those next two. Obviously, you want as many as possible, but it's another week in the books where you've banked 3 or 4 points, and the Islanders are sitting after 7 games with 9 points or whatever, 10 points, you feel pretty good.
Yeah.
So, it's a terrifying one. I can promise you that whoever's broadcasting the game for this ESPN thing, won't bring up the Devon Taves extension and all that junk. We know trade sucked.
Right.
You get it, man. It was 3 years ago. Do people keep bringing up like the Brandon Hagel trade for the Lightning and the Blackhawks?
My favorite thing about the Taves thing was when people were like, does he hold any ill will towards the Islanders for trading him? Why on God's green earth would he have any ill will towards Lou or the Islanders for trading him to Colorado, where he plays on an excellent team next to the best defenseman in the league? Why would he be mad? I don't understand. Like, it's just nonsense. It's just that kind of garbage is just stupid. But I was going to say the best thing
it's
about
the only,
this week,
it's the only bad trade that's happened in the NHL in the last 10 years, apparently.
Yep, no, that's true. It's true. You can go back and look it up. No bad trades.
Every other trade was just balanced scale,
even.
Nick Foligno was worth the 8 draft picks that the Maple Leafs gave up for him sure, because he wore that hat.
Yeah, right. Well, and Matt Murray has worked out beautifully for the
Leafs. Murray trade was a no-brainer.
Yeah. I was going to say the best thing about this week is that they're only playing against 2 Golden Child franchises in the Avalanche and Senators. And then the Blue Jackets, that Saturday night Blue Jackets game against the Islanders is going to be like tree falling in the woods level stuff, you know? So I'm not too worried about it. But don't forget the last time the Islanders played in Columbus was the Kent Johnson Michigan game. And his game has completely dried up since then too. He was healthy scratch the opener and stuff like that. So. He'll come back. He'll probably have a hat trick in that game. I look at the schedule. I think the Islanders are going to go 0-82 every year. So I do think they can get points out of here. The Senators were primed for a big game against Detroit and fell flat on their faces. So, I mean, it can't happen, you know. So, and that was with Jonas Korpisalo playing very well. So, and then the Blue Jackets, again, that team is not good. It really isn't. Roster-wise, they're not good. And so theoretically, the Islanders should be able to beat them pretty handily, but the Nationwide Arena has never, ever, ever been kind to the Islanders, and so my hopes are not high. And maybe, I don't know, the Avalanche, whenever a team like the Avalanche comes in, we've talked about this, I always look at what their schedule is. It's like, ooh, who are they playing the night before? They play, are they in Jersey? Are they in Philly? Are they at the Garden? Nope, the Avalanche are just sitting around. So no help there on Tuesday night.
Meanwhile, the Rangers are going to play the Oilers on Tuesday night, and the Oilers won't have Connor McDavid, of course. So.
He's out for 1 to 2 weeks with a upper body injury. Let's just check out what's going on. Oh, look at that. November 13th at Edmonton, New York Islanders. Yep. So there,
it's
that's going to
be like when Sidney Crosby came back. Yeah.
That's going to be your book it right now. I'm telling you right now, write this down. Yeah. That's going to be the Connor McDavid return game for the Oilers. And he's going to have probably 5 points in that game against the Islanders.
I hope that's not a Saturday night. Is it hockey night in Canada?
Is it the 13th of November? No, it's not. It's a Monday. So
let's just start the week with it. Anyway. It'll just be a regional broadcast.
Yeah. There you go.
That's going to suck. But I don't know. This week ahead is it's obviously scary because every goddamn day of the season is scary. Yes. But we won't know how scary it is until we get through that Avalanche game. Because it could be like M. Night Shyamalan level scary pretty quickly here, or we could be sitting through a Wes Anderson film or something that's as far away from scary as it can get. Winnie the Pooh. I don't know. We could be in a really good spot if they surprise some things.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if they play tough against the Avalanche and lose and then beat the Senators and Blue Jackets, I think we'll be pretty happy that way, So
I won't be shitting myself all day Wednesday and Thursday, but if they do beat the Senators after a good performance against Colorado and then a win against Ottawa, you're like, damn, this team, man.
Right. Yeah. They take those first two home games and then they, get no show in Columbus on Saturday. Like, you're like, all right,
we're doing the same exact episode again on Sunday where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of good, but it ended on such a sour note that it's hard. Yeah.
That would be kind of funny. Well, it wouldn't be the first time. I'll tell you that right now. Okay, so you mentioned Tuesday being a big one and a whole bunch of games being played. So ESPN is doing something new. They're calling it Frozen Frenzy. It's a whip-around show, apparently, where they're going to be covering every single game in the NHL. All 32 teams are all in action that night. I'm sure that if you partition out who's getting the amount of attention, the Islanders Avalanche game will probably be getting the least amount, despite the Avalanche being involved, obviously. This is a great idea, and I think ESPN is probably going to punt and ruin the whole thing because they often do. I look forward to who is going to pretend to be asleep during the Islanders portions of the game. I look forward to John Buchacross yelling non sequiturs that only he finds entertaining and thinking, Steve Levy deserves better than this because he's the only one who's really, cares about hockey here. So I don't know. Again, maybe I'm just in a bad mood, but you check it out. Maybe it's good. Maybe we're here next week saying, you know what? That was actually pretty cool. They should try that again. ESPN wants to do stuff, but every single time they try it with the NHL, it falls flat on its face. I watched that game again on Saturday, the Detroit Ottawa game, and my Hulu app, which has ESPN Plus, kept crashing on me. At one point I had to back out and then back in. And by the time I came back in, not only was Detroit had scored a goal, but it was a power play goal. I didn't see the power play. I didn't see the penalty and I didn't see the goal score just because I had to back out and back and come back in. So, I mean, if this works and it ends up kind of being a bit like NHL Red Zone, which the NFL has, then that's great. But my hopes are not high. Given the previous product, are you going to be watching Frozen Frenzy beginning at 8 p.m. on ESPN2 and running through 11 p.m.? That's it? 3 hours?
Yeah. Is that the best part? Is it's like they're setting – there's a lot to get into on this. And we rag on ESPN a lot. I don't think we have yet this season, though. But first of all, so this came out that they were doing this in maybe July. And of course it was greeted with, this is how you grow the game. We've been calling for this. This is awesome. I can't wait to gif every, Sebastian Aho, Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon zone entry for, all these games and stuff like that. But today I realized that, the NBA season starts on Tuesday night. Yeah. So the NHL does this thing. It is a good idea. I'm not complaining about this at all. Like, I think they should do stuff like this. I think if it was on a Saturday, I get that they didn't want to go up against college football yet, but you know, a Saturday in March or something when playoff races are going on, maybe like the day before the trade deadline, or I don't know, something like that. But they're doing this. It's a good idea. Tip of the cap. No two games are starting at the same time. Once again, good job. So they're obviously putting some serious marketing weight as much as the NHL and ESPN can with the NHL. And they chose NBA opening night.
Right.
What? I get, and once again, these things aren't easy to do because you need you need 16 buildings to be open. You need ESPN to not have any, you know, contractual obligations with other stuff, and all sorts of things probably have to fall into place. So I get that there's probably very few dates to choose from on the season, but it's NBA. Like, they weren't sitting around when they were planning this and being like, we got to make sure, that something else isn't going on that night. You want to do it on a random NBA Tuesday? Absolutely, that's unavoidable. But it is great that it's on NBA opening night. So nobody was going to be watching anyways. But now nobody's going to be watching, and which is great because hopefully the ratings come out. They're terrible, and John Buccigross is this is it for him. But
well, there's a reason it's on ESPN2. So every other channel is going to be devoted to the NBA, and I can promise you that ESPN's NBA coverage is not going to end promptly at 11 o'clock. And it's not going to start at 8 either. It's going to start probably all day.
Yeah.
And then end whenever it needs to end and probably bleed into SportsCenter and
stuff. Or there will be an NHL game on ESPN at 8 o'clock and there's just going to be a lot of NBA fans on Twitter being like, what the hell is a Kraken? You know.
As always, yeah. I mean, but, you know, maybe it ends up being great. And people would be like, you know what? That actually was surprisingly good. They did a good job. But again, given how ESPN has broadcast this last season of games, it's not high. It's the same product. It's not enticing. It's not entertaining. They have maybe two guys that are pretty good. Bob Wischusen and Steve Levy are the only two guys that can call a game and sound like they know what they're talking about. The intermission set, by the way, I don't know if it looked like this last year too, but it looks like it's the size of an airplane hangar, but there's only a desk and two guys at it. So why does it need to be this big? Why are we going to build a battleship in here? Like, I don't understand what is happening. Why does it need to be, just make it small? I don't, it's just a desk with two guys. I don't understand what's going on. But
something that my boss, Chad Millman, who worked at his ESPN forever, told me once, and I've never forgot it, and I think about this way with like the new, I don't know if you have the NHL app on your phone, but
I do.
It's terrible.
It's like absolutely terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. The update this year kicked it back like 14 years. It's like an app from 2008.
It's very slow to refresh.
None of the scores are ever right.
Yeah. Right.
It's horrible. It's hard to like go from swipe to a different day.
Yeah. I saw the other day, Oliver Ekman-Larsson had like two goals for the Panthers at the same exact time. Like, yeah. Just they doubled up the goals. I was like, wow, good for him. But anyway, stuff like that.
Yeah. And so what Chad told me once was that the people who produce sports TV produce sports TV for other executive producers. Like they are thinking about the 62-year-old guy from TNT who's watching the intermission show and being like, wow, that was great. Just to get like that text message.
Yeah.
Great job on the Charles Barkley segment. So I've never forgotten those words because when you watch them, you're like, wait, why the hell are they doing this? Makes no sense. Like, oh, well, it's because the guy who's producing this doesn't watch sports. He's, you know, just trying to impress his friends, his TV friends. And I think that's similar with app developers a lot of times with sports. It's like they're developing apps for other app developers or, you know, geniuses.
I've played a lot of video games and been like, has anybody who made this game ever played a video game before? I don't understand why these things, why it's asking me to do this. This is very strange, but yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Like the person trying to use the NHL app is Gord, you know, Dwight McNielsen from Red Deer, Alberta. It's not some Silicon Valley guy who's like, wow, I really appreciate the sleekness of this app. They just want to know who scored for the Oilers.
Right. or hopefully, you know, looking and hoping that the Rangers lost, which is what I used the NHL app for, basically. But yeah, it's true. So, but you know what? We'll watch it, at least a little bit of it. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I don't plan on watching too much of it because I like the way Butch and Brendan and Shannon and obviously Thomas Hickey call Islanders games. But, you know, maybe it'll be worth a shot in an intermission or something like that. So we'll see what happens. Okay. Speaking of hockey media, we had a great response to last week's Master Leaf Theater. And so I wasn't planning on doing another one, but then something fell into our laps and it couldn't be ignored. And I was just such a perfect fodder for this. So we bring to you another installment of Master Leaf Theater. Okay, Mike, let me ask you a question. Did you know that Ryan Reeves now plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
You know, I do. And believe it or not, you know, it's funny because a lot of times with fourth liners, when they sign with a new team or third pair defensemen or rookies who make the team out of camp, maybe concert pianist Fraser Minton comes to mind. If you're a fan of another team, you just won't realize it. I had no idea Dmitry Kulikov was back with the Panthers.
Neither did I.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So players like that, you just won't know. Mm. But for some reason, and I can't really figure out why, I've heard a lot about fourth liner Ryan Reeves, who plays about 8 minutes a game for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who you know, barely use him, and he doesn't seem to be playing very well.
No, he does not. But he had an interaction that caused a lot of media attention earlier this week. So the Leafs last week had three games. They won the last one, unfortunately, so it kind of makes this a little bit less funny. But their first game last week was against the Chicago Connor Bedards in Toronto, which was a big deal because the media guys all got their chance to talk to Bedard for the first time. And then later on Thursday, they had a big matchup with the Florida Panthers, who had knocked them out of the playoffs last year. So it was a big grudge match, blah, 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 blah. Well, the Leafs lost both of those games, okay? But after, in the first game against Chicago, Reeves had an interaction with Corey Perry, another third-line player that you may have missed is on Chicago now. You know, there was a time when Corey Perry was a fantastic player, but those days are gone now. But anyway, the Leafs would lose that game. Perry would go on to score the game-winning goal. But at one point, he and Reeves started shouting at each other from the benches. And I'm here to tell you, if you haven't already seen the clip, it's the dumbest thing you'll see all week. Basically, it's one guy yelling, oh, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. And the other guy going, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. For like, you know, 20 seconds, and then they escape off. It's worthless. It's nothing. But of course, this was a huge thing. People saying, Ryan Reeves getting in Corey Perry's face. From what, 10 feet away on his own team's bench? How is that in his face? It was nonsense, but of course it's the Leafs, so there's a million articles about it. But this is from Sportsnet, not from Luke Fox Jukebox. We don't want to be bullying this man, so we're going to try and spread this around as long as we do these things. But this is the entire article right now, and this is the exact kind of thing that was going around last week. So the title is Maple Leafs Reeves on Blackhawks Perry. Quote, he kind of acts tough. He's not tough. So this is post-game after the Leafs have lost the game. So it says, Toronto Maple Leafs forward Ryan Reeves exchanged some words and shoves with Chicago Blackhawks forward Corey Perry on Monday night. Turns out, Reeves isn't a big fan of the guy who scored the game winner for Chicago. Reeves, 36, said he started not liking Perry, 38, during the first game they ever played against each other early last decade. Why? Quote, just the way he runs his mouth. He kind of acts tough. He's not tough, Reeves said Wednesday. Reeves, of course, is known for playing the enforcer role. He has 129 points and 1,033 penalty minutes in 833 career games. Harry has also spent his fair share of time in the penalty box, 1,382 minutes, but he has 887 points in 1,261 career games. Harry is also a four-time All-Star. He won the Hart Trophy in 2011, the Stanley Cup as an Anaheim Duck in 2007, and captured Olympic gold with Canada in 2010 and 2014. None of that will change Reeves' opinion, though. Quote, "I never really liked him, to be honest," he said. "We always seem to kind of run into each other when we play against each other. Not a lot of love for that guy." Asked if Perry would drop the gloves with him, Reeves said, quote, "definitely wouldn't." The Leafs and Blackhawks meet again November 24th in Chicago. That is your Master Leaf Theater for this week. In case you're wondering, that voice I used there was what I call People's Court guy. You ever watching People's Court and they have that guy, like the narrator? I don't know if it's the same guy or like multiple guys doing the same voice, but that's the voice I was going for right there. But this is exactly like Rocky, except everybody sucks and there's no story. Like there's two guys who are just, you know, whatever, they don't like each other. Okay, who cares? Like, and this would be nothing if not for the fact that this happened on Monday. The Leafs' next game was on Thursday, and so for three goddamn days, we had to get Ryan Reeves' analysis and discussion because of this, because he had some words with Corey Perry, the same words that everybody has in the league with everybody, including Corey Perry. But this was like front page news because it happened with the Leafs and the Blackhawks and Bedard. Again, they lost that game and the next game. that stuff, you know, kind of was secondary. And the fact that this went on for a week was just unbearable. And it wasn't until like Thursday, I'm like, okay, we need to do something about this. It's just, why? What? Like, what? Who cares? Who cares about any of this? Why is Ryan Reeves suddenly the most interesting man in hockey? I don't understand this. There's nothing interesting about this guy. He gets signed by teams looking to get toughness. They realize after a year and a half, they're not any tougher than they were before. And then they trade him to some other dumb team who needs toughness. Like, it's just, this goes on and on and on. It's just ridiculous. And like, and other guys get this treatment too. Pat Maroon got the most interesting man in hockey, you know, treatment for a while because he was on a bunch of cup winners, and good for him. But like, these guys aren't nearly as interesting as we have to pretend like they are. I just don't get it. I don't know. And to hear a week of this was absurd. So I don't know.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
I've been sitting
on
this for a while.
It's I can think of last night, Rasmus Dahlin. I think he put a hit on Pageau. Was it? And then like a couple shifts later, there's like a couple little scrums. I'm sure that people were yelling at one another.
Yeah.
Matt Martin spent a lot of the Devils game yelling. Yeah. I think it was Timo Meier.
With the box together. Yeah. At one point.
Yeah. Could you imagine, like, this is going to be a big part of a subplot of Master Leaf Theater is, once again, can you imagine Andrew Gross writing a sidebar story about Matt Martin and Timo Meier?
Right. Jawing at each other from the benches. Yeah, no.
Matt Martin says that he hasn't played much against Timo Meier, but
really
doesn't like the guy.
Yeah.
If Andrew Gross went to the people at Newsday and saying, I got to write the sidebar about Matt Martin and Timo Meier, they'd say, Andrew, is everything okay? Like,
yeah.
You're gonna have to tell us who Timo Meier is,
right?
Was Matt Martin carjacked? What's the story here? No. These two guys were yelling at each other in the hockey game, just like the high school game between, you know, Hicksville and Sayville, because I saw two kids yelling at each other in that hockey game too. We're not gonna write a story about it because it happens in any sport, every game.
Even if Gross did write an article about that, like a quick short sidebar thing, like nobody would care. Like it would just be like, oh, all right, whatever. Like it wouldn't be a week of discussion about this. So it just, you know,
imagine there was, I'd be so scared. Like, are the Islanders Islanders are either in the Stanley Cup final or there's something really wrong going here. And And then there's what's been enjoyable about Ryan Reeves being on the Leafs is that, so you have these guys writing these Ryan Reeves as the Time Person of the Year pieces, these op-eds about him. And then you have the most annoying people on hockey Twitter saying, I just can't believe like how much run Ryan Reeves gets on online. Like, this is so annoying. His expected goals for is 32%. The Leafs are getting caved in when he's on the ice and he's only playing 8 minutes. Why are we still talking about this guy? Why aren't we talking about Matthew Nyes or some, like, spending more time talking about the real play drivers on the team? Like, you just spent three tweets talking about Ryan Reeves. So you're doing the same thing. So that watching those people fall over themselves for without realizing that they are getting mad at the same things that we get mad at about every Toronto Maple Leaf.
Right. It's like, welcome to our world.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you think it's annoying to hear about Tyler Bertuzzi's missing teeth, even though the guy's been in the league for a decade and it's looked the same for a decade? And you just are starting to hear about it like it's a new thing now, like he just joined the NHL from outer space? No, this is not a one-off thing with Ryan Reeves. This is, you guys were talking about Easton Cowan and Fraser Mitton, by the way. We're going to need to wrap up the Fraser Mitton Master League Theater because the man has been, I shouldn't say the man, he's 18 years old. The player has been terrible for them. Like, if you listen to Real Kipper and Born, like Dan and I do, because we have problems. Yeah. And it's a show about the Leafs, and I listen to it anytime the Leafs lose or something bad happens. They've just been like, this guy can't keep up. He's not good. This is a mistake. They need to just kind of get rid of him and end the experiment. And the other folks in the Leafs media spent a week and a half or the entirety of training camp talking about how this guy was basically on par with Connor Bedard. And none of them are going to be like, huh, maybe this was our fault.
Yeah.
Like that this kid, everybody expected this kid to step onto NHL ice and just light it up. Maybe it was because I wrote this piece about him and Morgan Riley and how much he loves the game on for the biggest media company in Toronto. Like nobody's gonna take that on the chin. But they're not gonna be like, oh man, why are the Leafs struggling with Ryan and keep playing Ryan Reeves? Oh, maybe it's because you keep writing about this stuff. Like it's good for us, I guess, because like you said, it has been a very well received bit.
Yes, it did. Yeah, people like
it. Very sponsorable too. If you want to go come out there and lump some money on to be the sponsors of Master Leaf Theater, maybe the Montreal Canadiens want to sponsor Master Leaf Theater.
That would be funny. That would be very funny. Or I don't know, like maybe not Canadian Tire, but like, you know, Pep Boys or something like that could sponsor. But I mean, again, we don't know how often we're going to do this, but when something crops up and makes itself available the way this has, we're going to do this. And this was just, I mean, after the 72nd hour of this over the course of the week, I was like, why are we still talking? Why are we still hearing about this? And the fact that other Leafs people were saying that, you know, Leafs fans that are, again, the most annoying people on Twitter were wondering why it was getting still talked about is just that's just a chef's kiss right there. And it's like, no, we don't want to hear ever about your team, but we keep hearing
on the nose.
Yeah, exactly. But there you go. Well, I mean, they shouldn't have to worry, because again, a year from now he'll get traded, and you know, some other team is looking for toughness, and he'll be there like he did with the, I remember when the Rangers signed him, I was like, oh my god, what are they gonna do now?
Yeah. And before we move on, and I know that we're already deep into this one, and we say that every episode too, is and this is related to Master Leaf Theater. Mm. We have to congratulate the newest member of The Athletic, Chris Johnston.
Yes.
I mean, what a move.
It's a finally, huge move. Yeah.
A blind spot. We've been saying all along that The Athletic has this gaping blind spot in the NHL's biggest market. Like, why aren't they covering the biggest team in the league, the biggest cash mover in the league, and now they finally have someone to cover them, Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, it's definitely because they were missing that Leafs presence, and so by getting Johnston, who has covered them for so long,
so well
that's,
too.
That's a huge, yeah, like, so
very
well.
Very down the middle, unbiased stuff from CJ over the years, and also very hinged. He's never on CJ. I mean, you can't ever call him unhinged.
I mean, it's not like he was, you know, a credible sort of all-around reporter before John Tavares signed with the Leafs. And then afterwards, he basically broke into his mother's house, stole his pajamas that he took with used for the picture, and then wore them, has worn them underneath his clothes for the last 6 years. I don't know where I heard that, but that's never. Definitely not Chris Johnston. That's, I just want to be, you know, it's no, definitely Chris. Not.
Right. He's so much more professional than that.
Yes, definitely. He's he would never steal.
Not peddling cryptocurrencies. he's not doing that kind of stuff. He's not trying to solve world crisis on his hockey podcast by running marathons. Yeah. He's completely had very stable head on his shoulders when it comes to where hockey and the Toronto Maple Leafs fit in the scheme of things in the world. Like it's weird. We're a speck in the universe, and Chris does a really good job of conveying that. So, congratulations to CJ. Well earned. I mean, come on, couldn't have happened to a better, more intrepid, unbiased reporter. This is the kind of stuff that the Athletic needs. So,
And he's also pioneering. Hats off to CJ for also pioneering getting paid in something called Leafs Coin, which is apparently some sort of digital cryptocurrency that he of his own making. He actually got the Athletic to sign off on this. So very impressive, very impressive. He's a real Renaissance man. So there you go. Okay, it is getting long. We're getting to the 90-minute mark here, so we should probably wrap it up. We'll come back next week with a look at those three games and talk a little bit more about this Frozen Frenzy thing. Don't forget to sign up at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and at Spotify, please. Our theme song is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Somebody asked about that. Morning Haze by Family Dinner. They're great. Listen to more of their music on Bandcamp and at Spotify. Also, read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Islanders Anxiety Podcasts are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Find out more at fansfirstsports.com. Shop VintageIceHockey.com. Try Wines from the Pinot Project. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts on the week that was? I thought it was good, bad, and ugly. You thought it was mostly good, definitely not ugly.
Yeah, good, bad, and resilient. I don't really know the best way to put it, but yeah, like I said, it's really nice that the season hasn't ended yet, as we are through four games, and this is a lot better than the second week went. For the Islanders last year, the second episode, we were basically in tears crying out for Lou Lamoriello to make a move and to save me from myself. So to be here heading into the third week of the NHL season and to not be in the fetal position is a good start, I guess. And
good point.
Yeah, I mean,
there you go.
And we got Bowie Horvat and Brock Nelson. These guys, we love these guys. So as long as they keep playing well, I don't know. I feel way too confident to be confident, I guess.
Feeling too confident to be confident. All right. I like it. We'll go with that. And thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again next week, and we'll see what happens after the Islanders' next three games. All right. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.